This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. It's a sweltering week, and fall is about a month away. For gardeners, it's a busy time to plan for the changing season. So today, we're going to spend the hour talking about preparing your gardens and landscape for autumn, and of course, taking your questions. Joining me now are Ohio State University Extension Educator Pamela Bennett. Welcome back, Pam.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
Great to have you. Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator, Kamisha Montgomery. Thanks for being here, Kamisha.
Thank you.
And Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent, Brandon George. Welcome back, Brandon.
Thank you.
They're here. They're ready to answer your questions. So give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Pam, what are some of the most important do's and don'ts for late summer lawn care?
Well, this is a personal opinion, but it's also based on research. Don't stop. We get to the end of this season, and as we were chatting earlier, people kind of think, okay, it's time to, wind things down, stop doing your yard and, put the hoses away and we're done. But actually, this is the really good time of the year for helping to boost your lawn. And one of the things research has shown that, if you have a nice thick lawn, then you have less opportunity for weeds to grow. So the two best times to fertilize your lawns if you're only going to do it twice, the two best times would be early September and then again 8 weeks later. That gives the lawn a really good chance to beef up those root systems. The second fertilizer in October, November will go into the roots and will be stored by the plant. And what you'll see next spring then is a thicker, greener, denser lawn that will choke out the weeds. And in terms of the weeds, as temperatures cool down here in September, this is a really good time if you want to get rid of any weeds. If you're one of those that don't like the dandelions and others, this is a good time to do it because they're actively storing sugars and they will take in the nutrient or the herbicide rather, and you'll get a much better kill effect from the weeds this time of the year.
How do you feel about dandelions and weeds? I guess I'm wondering, Brandon, is there a case to be made for just letting them be? I mean, they're kind of green too.
I mean, a lot of people will often say, well, in the spring, dandelions are one of the first flowers for pollinators. So you can make that argument that they do have some use for insects. So that could be a plus. I mean, technically you could eat the root if you like to have edible weeds. So I don't really mind personally weeds in my lawn. My lawn's kind of just a mishmash of clover and violets and things. So, but yeah, for some people that might be a problem.
Yeah. And Pam, you were talking about fertilizer. I know that there are some people who are kind of worried about fertilizer and potential environmental impacts of fertilizer. What do you think about that? Are there certain fertilizers you think do the job without causing any problems?
Yeah, good question. But I do want to go back to the dandelions, and Brandon's exactly right. It's a personal opinion, whether you like them or not. When I first put our lawn in, we put it in on a 5-acre cornfield, and I asked my husband, what color do you think the lawn should be? His opinion was green. He thought it should be green, but I was okay with violets and clover and dandelions until they started creeping into my flower beds.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of that personal feeling whether, you want them or not. So we keep the front lawn green and I have the flower beds for pollinators, and the backyard, it doesn't matter. So again, he's exactly right. It is a personal opinion, and neither one is right or wrong. And same thing with fertilizers. If you thicken up the lawn, you don't have to use herbicides to eliminate any of the weeds if you don't want weeds. You can use synthetic, you can use organic. Organic fertilizers take a little bit longer to break down. Synthetic fertilizers are perfectly fine to use if you apply them appropriately. And therein lies the problem. You put a fertilizer down before a nice heavy rain and it'll soak into the turf, and the turf grass, like I said, will take it up and use it. But if you misuse it and you either overdo it or say you spread it on, one thing that just drives me nuts is when lawn care companies spread it and leave it on the sidewalk. Put it in the lawn area. The lawn area will utilize that nutrient and it doesn't go into the drains or anything. So using it appropriately and responsibly and following directions is not a problem for the environment.
Misha, what's your stand on dandelions? I know you're here for vegetable gardens, but but you make magical foods out of all kinds of things.
Well, I'm more have the opinion of what Brandon was reaching with as far as it being like the medicinal values and making tea and things like that. So that's what the benefit of dandelions is for me.
Okay. So you're kind of pro dandelion.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't trying to, this wasn't a political question, so I don't mean to make you uncomfortable there.
Tis the season.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about garden cleanup and transitioning the garden from summer to fall. Where do you stand on removing those fading annuals, Brandon? Do you like to pull them up? Do you like to leave them for the insects? They can make little like insect condos for a while, can't they?
Yeah, honestly, when it comes to perennials, and annuals too for some effect, but a lot of our native perennials and pollinating plants, you could say, have great seed heads that I would leave as long as possible, pretty much into almost March, because I know they'll use those seed heads when they're dry, when they're looking for food, when it's scarce in the winter. So I leave it up for them always. Yeah. Plus, I think seed heads are so beautiful. They're like skeletons of a garden in the winter. And I think there's some stunning grasses like sea oats. And I love echinacea seed heads. So I really do like them as ornaments.
Huh. What do you think, Pam? You clearly have very strong feelings about your flower garden. No dandelions allowed. What's your kind of maintenance as you head into fall for your flower garden?
So you guys will all kind of understand this. It depends is something we horticulturists use all the time. And for me, it depends on the plant. You know, my perennial bed, if hostas are, you know, when they get frozen or even light frost, they're mush. They provide no environmental services. So I will take anything out that doesn't look good or doesn't provide that benefit, like Brandon said, in terms of, you know, looks good during the winter months. And an interesting thing I learned a couple years ago from our bee expert, Denise Ellsworth, you know, there's a big rage now. Everybody says leave your stems up on your plants over winter. Well, what happens is the bees, the native nesting bees, won't nest in those stems. They will nest in the stems next spring. So next spring, what you want to do is cut them back to about knee high to hip high. You know, if you're going to cut them back, leave them about knee high to hip high. Those bees then will nest in next year's, this past year's stems. Their nest will be next year. And then you can cut those down after the end of the season next year. So leaving stems over winter is not really, you know, the best benefit, but leaving them in the spring, not, you know, not cutting them back to the ground in the spring is really more important than the winter. But like I said, the winter is all about what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And if it's coneflowers, you know, feeding the birds. So it depends on what the plant is and what environmental services it's going to give back.
Okay. We got an email from Tim. Tim writes, I have several perennial potted ferns. In a 24-hour period, they went from healthy, vibrant plants to looking like they were drying out on the tips of the plant. They've been watered every day, but I just can't figure out what happened. I have two other plants that look fine. Any thoughts on that? It has been awfully hot, but I don't
know. I would ask him about the sun exposure. I guess I would just need to see no more information about the site and soil he used or
okay.
Whatever.
We need more information, Tim. Please email back or you can give us a call at 513-419-7100 to interact with our experts and answer their questions about the sun and the soil. We did have another email from Jonathan. Jonathan wrote, every year my very tall tulip poplar starts losing leaves in early August. This year, the leaves have turned yellow and dropped in much greater quantities. It's like the whole tree is turning in early August. Is there a remedy? Would fertilizing help? Pam, do you have thoughts about that?
Absolutely. That is really common for tulip poplars to drop leaves early. A couple things. They get a leaf spot disease. Right now in the central Ohio area, we're seeing some problems with aphids. Now, the aphids aren't necessarily causing the leaf drop, but the leaf spots disease do. Now, it truly is no big deal. It will not hurt the tree. They're going to lose leaves anyways. It is annoying. So when our trees start to drop right now, it's annoying. And they're dropping probably more this year than in past years just because it's been so dry. So if it were me, I would not worry about it, wouldn't do anything about it because it is certainly not going to hurt the tree. don't fertilize. You don't want to fertilize a tree that's in stress, particularly during this really dry period that we have. And it's really not a big deal. And to try to spray for a leaf spot disease is almost impossible.
Okay. So anything you wanted to add to that, Brandon?
No, I 100% agree. I definitely think it's a drought-related issue. Same thing with like river birch and a lot of other things that just are more prone to drought stress than others.
Okay. We're talking about gardening for the full hour today. Don't wait until the end of the show to ask your questions. Call right now, 513-419-7100, or email talk@wvxu.org. Kamisha, let's talk about veggies. It's not too late to plant. What are some of the best vegetables to plant this time of year?
Oh, this time of year, you'll want to plant mostly in your brassica families, your green leafy vegetables, cabbage, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, a lot of the plants that don't really require pollination. So right now, putting those in the ground as a transplant will help you get a harvest before Thanksgiving. Just a disclaimer, if you are planting and harvesting the collard greens for Thanksgiving, you will be responsible for the collard greens for the remainder of your time as a gardener.
That's just a lifetime commitment.
It
huh?
really is. But those are some great crops to start in your garden for a fall garden.
Yeah. And what are some of the pros and cons to a fall garden? My understanding is that there are typically fewer diseases. Of course, the weather's cooler for outside work. But there can also be just loads of insects that have spent the summer months getting busy and multiplying.
Yeah, definitely that is a benefit of a fall garden. You don't have as much pest pressure. But what I've been noticing is that there's more pests in the summer that are overwintering, like harlequins. I've seen harlequins. I've seen aphids that have lasted in well into the fall and harlequins into the winter. I've also seen them early in the spring when you would think that, you know, the life cycle is pretty much over. But so now that our climate is changing, we have to address our pest issues and how to properly manage those as far as our IPM.
Mm-hmm. We do have some callers on the line. Thank you for listening and making your calls now. Hey, Carrie, thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Question number one is my use of preen. Historically, I've used it like twice a year, once like around September, once in March, to kind of help me with the weeding that I do in my landscaping beds, which is shrubs, flowers, stuff like that, no vegetables. So I'd like to know about that. And second question is it too late for me to mulch just to get rid of some like bare soil that I'm afraid is going to wash down a hill?
Okay. Thanks, Carrie. Brandon, I'm going to let you start. What do you think about preen?
I think preen can work if you apply it at the right time before they germinate. I also would be mindful of anyone who uses preen because I know it can have issues near aquatic invertebrates, so you have to be careful. I think there's a warning on the label, so just make sure you follow it to that. With regards to the mulch, you can apply mulch anytime, and certainly you know, if you have bare spots, and even when, as we get cooler and wetter later on into the late fall, you know, having mulch will obviously protect roots from heaving, and also just keeping weeds, any seeds that get on that bare soil, you'll protect them with the mulch. So you might get fewer weeds in the spring.
Yeah. Pam, do you want to add to that? Pam, did we lose you?
Nope, I'm here.
Okay.
And
sorry.
I completely agree with what he said. And he's right. I mean, as you know by now, I'm a big read the label because there's some products on with there, some plants with preen that you can't use until like 6 weeks post-planting and so forth. So always read the label.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Carrie. I sure hope that helps. Thanks for calling and thanks for listening. We also have Yolanda on the line. Hey, Yolanda. Thanks for calling.
Hi, love your show. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know, I have a dog that loves to eat grass, and my husband is insisting on, he likes to get the yard treated so it looks nice. I can care less. And I just want to know if any fertilizer, synthetic or organic, is safe for a dog. And like after the 24 hours.
Oops. I think we might have lost Yolanda, or maybe Yolanda got another call. So Pam, what about that? What fertilizers are safe to use with pets? Is it a matter of timing? Is it a matter of the kind you use?
So my son had a dog and I have grandkids. I am not completely organic, but I'm very conscientious about using chemicals. Fertilizers are safe, but what I tell them and what I practice is put your fertilizer down and water. So in other words, make sure it's watered in. There's no granules. Number one, it's good for activating the product, so it takes care of it. And number two, I don't like the kids or the dogs being out there walking around with the granules in the soil and they're bringing it back in the house. And then the kids are on the, you know, carpet. So I think that to me is a bigger concern about using fertilizers than the fertilizer itself. Water it in thoroughly, let it be activated. The plant's going to start taking it in and it does not hurt the pets. Now with herbicides, definitely wait for that 24 to 48 hour period. Because again, you want it to dry. When it's dry, it's absorbed into the plant. You don't want them walking around on a fertilizer that might have a weed control in it. So I keep them off the lawn for 2 days. And I discuss this with my son, you know, because he's got kids playing outside. So he'll do the front yard one time, you know, one day. And then 3 or 4 days later, he might do the backyard. But he's very conscientious about that.
And so the fertilizer, when you said you have to make sure it's soaked in, how long does that take after you water it to make sure those granules are kind of soaked in?
A good heavy rain, a good inch of water, you know, if you want it. And that's why I always wait until right before it rains so I don't have to irrigate it. Mm-hmm. The fertilizer salt. So dog's paws walking on that salt granule constantly, you know, bringing it in the house or on their paws, it's not good for them. And same thing if kids are playing in it. So it's not going to hurt them otherwise, other than the fact that it's a high salt content.
Okay.
And if you start watering it in, make sure the granules aren't there, then you're in really good shape.
Great. Well, thanks, Yolanda. I hope that helps. And I hope it creates some peace with your dog and your husband and the whole family is happy. We appreciate your listening and calling. Hey, Timothy, thanks for calling. What's your question? Are you with us, Timothy?
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can. Now I can.
Yes, ma'am. So my question was, and you know, I'm just getting into gardening and as a hobby. My first flower choice I chose was sunflowers. And at the moment, only one has really survived thus far. I'm not sure if it's the weeds in my garden bed that are fighting for the nutrients or what I could do to help it bloom before this year ends.
Okay. So are you looking to figure out how to help that sunflower, or are you thinking about planting other stuff?
Perhaps helping the sunflower in addition to, is it savable? And maybe if not, what else I could plant before the year?
Okay. Super. What do you think, Brandon?
I definitely feel like I maybe heard a little bit of this, but if there is competition from weeds, certainly that is going to maybe stunt its growth, slow it down. So make sure you keep weeds away from the desired plants, obviously, because that'll also create openings for disease and poor airflow. So at this point of the year, you know, you won't plant any more sunflowers because that kind of window is closing. But for the one you have, I would just say remove any weeds around it. Keep it watered as we're going into a long dry period. And that's pretty much all you can do at this point as we get into the point where it's blooming. Okay. And then, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Timothy. I hope that helps. Good luck with your sunflower. We've got some other folks on hold, but we've got to take a real quick break and we will continue with our gardening show right as soon as we can. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We've got a full hour of gardening today and a panel of experts ready to answer your questions. My guests are Ohio State University Extension Educator Pamela Bennett, Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, and Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George. If you have questions about your garden or landscape, and we know you do, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We do have some callers who have been waiting patiently. Hi, Bill. Thanks for your patience. What's your question?
My question is raspberries. I've got a patch of heritage raspberries, been there at least 5 years, and this spring they started dying. So So I sprayed what was left, and that didn't help. And now I've got, they're all dead except for one or two canes, and I like to replant them, raspberries in that area, and I want to know if I can do that.
What do you think, Kamisha?
I think that you can replant them in that same area. I think what you can do is try to get a soil test to see if there is any deficiencies or if you need to add anything to make the soil a little bit more acidic. You can reach out to Hamilton County Conservation District or Kenton County Extension Office for a soil test just to see if you need to amend anything in that soil since they've been there. I'm not sure if you have fertilized them already, but that can be something that gives you that information on what you need to do as far as that soil is concerned.
Fertilize them this spring, and they've been there a while. You think the soil might not, they like acid soil, is that right?
Slightly acidic, yes.
All right.
Okay.
Can I go with the same variety, or would a different variety be better or make any difference?
Once you get the soil test, I think that will be your clue on which variety to choose. But as long as the soil is slightly acidic, anywhere from like a 6.5 to about a 6.7, almost a 7, is ideal for raspberries.
All right. I'll get that done and take a look.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. We have Deb on the line. Hi, Deb. Thanks for your patience. What's your question or comment?
Hi. It involves fungus in the garden and when to remove plants that appear fungal. I have a small, healthy bulldog, a young dog, and he had a sudden growth on his leg. The vet had it analyzed and said it was full of aspergillus. And so I'm wondering, do I need to go through my garden and take any moldy leaves and get rid of them?
Interesting question. I'm sorry about your bulldog. I hope your bulldog's doing okay. Pam, do you have any thoughts about that?
Sure. So typically, the diseases that you would see in a garden would not affect human beings or dogs. We have things like downy mildew, powdery mildew, leaf spot diseases, and they're not going to affect a human being or an animal by any means. So I would be very, very doubtful. Brandon, I don't know if you'd agree, but I would be very doubtful that the bulldog got this from the garden.
Yeah, I would say the same. I would just be very careful about if there's any mold inside, because some of those
inside the house, you
those
mean?
Sometimes can be more deadly, affecting human respiratory health. So I would just say that maybe that could be an issue, perhaps.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Well, thanks, Deb. I hope the dog's doing okay. We appreciate your calling and listening to the show. We have Kevin on the line. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show every day.
Thank you.
I have three rose bushes in the same flower bed. One of them blooms annually. Two of them do not. They push out new cane. I cut it back in the fall, cover them, but I cannot get two of them to bloom.
Do you have thoughts on that, Brandon?
Well, I'm wondering if the two that don't bloom, if they only bloom on old wood, because there are some roses that are not repeating roses because they only do one flush and it's always pretty much on old wood. So I would make sure you know what rose variety it is and to see if that could be the problem there, that it only blooms on old wood. So if you prune it back in the fall, all that growth it put on, it won't flower, if that's the case, potentially.
They become very spindly and long.
Okay.
My question, Brandon, would be, is it possible that these plants, the tops died out, and what you are seeing is the root, which is usually grafted onto,
the root
would be growing. Yeah.
The rootstock plant, yeah.
That would be my suspicion.
Do you think I should just get rid and not plant on them working or blooming?
Yeah, they're not. So what happens, they're grafted. So during some certain winters, and a few winters we did have this, it gets cold enough that it kills the top, but the roots survive. So the roots start growing, and they are not pretty roses. They're just, you know, more for the support and the structure and the, you know, the stability of that plant above. So if they look like that and they're the same variety, then I would say get rid of them.
Thank you all. Thanks, Lucy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we have Mark on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hello there.
Hey there, what's your question?
I am planting in my very small front yard,
I'm planning a kind of a stepping stone mosaic pattern, and I want to know what a good indigenous plant would be to grow in the cracks between the stones that would that doesn't grow very high, you know, real something real short. And then, sort of before you answer, I'm curious if anyone knows what some plants are that you will see growing out of cracks here in this area that almost look like a succulent, a tiny succulent. They have very tiny leaves and stems, and they creep along the cement. They'll grow out of a crack and creep along the cement or in the dirt. Because I thought those might actually be just fine.
Mm-hmm. And what part of town do you live in, Mark?
I'm on Eastern Avenue.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Eastern Avenue, one of these the old houses that have the tiny front yards.
Okay, okay. What do you think, Brandon? Do you have thoughts for Mark?
I don't know if this is serious or well. The reason I was kind of laughing was because indigenous ground covers, I think, wild violets, they will be there whether you want them or not. But regards to, I mean, certainly, I would say this. You need to know, too, how wet that soil is going to be. So there's a lot of interesting things like creeping thyme, phlox might work, but you want to make sure the soil drainage is adequate between those stepping stones, because if you have a lot of winter wet conditions, a lot of those things will rot out and die, and then you'll be left with whatever weed fills in that space, which might not be what you want. So for indigenous ground covers, though, that's a little tricky for things like
we have a native. I'm sorry, Brandon.
No, go ahead.
A native. Sedum kamchaticum, the native sedum, might be what he's talking about that would work.
That could be, yeah.
But again, it has to be extremely dry for that, and you really couldn't walk on it.
Yeah, you're right.
Is that what the little plant is that Mark was describing that looks almost like a tiny succulent, he said? Do you know what that
is? It sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like sedum, yes. Yeah,
I would say that.
Okay.
He mentioned, Brandon mentioned thyme, and thyme is, it's not indigenous, but boy, right. It is sturdy, it's tough. You can walk on it. I mean, it's really a good one for cracks.
It is great, especially if you have good drainage. Loves to bake in the heat and can take drought really well.
Okay.
Same with the herb, thyme.
Thyme, the herb, is that?
Yes, yep. Creeping thyme, like creeping red thyme. There's many different creeping thymes you could use. Yep.
Okay. Well, Mark, thanks for calling. It sounds like it's going to be beautiful. We appreciate your listening to the show. We have Nancy on the line. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Thanks. So I have some honey milkweed. I think it's honey milkweed, which I love because it's a great pollinator. And I also have some, like, I don't know, traditional whatever milkweed. Trying to get some butterflies in, but I have trouble with aphids. And I know the ladybugs eat them. I've tried to spray them off. I haven't tried the soapy water yet. But is there a way to discourage them from coming back next year?
Hmm. Pam, what do you think?
I wouldn't worry about them because they don't do anything to the plant whatsoever. And it's not that's not why the butterflies aren't there. It's very common milkweed aphid. There's several different species that get on your milkweeds. And I've never seen them kill a plant. Spraying them off with water works because they don't fly very well, so it'll knock them off. But personally, I would not do anything about discouraging them or worrying about them because they're not going to kill the plant.
Hmm. What do you think, Nancy?
It was in a pot. They did kill it, but it did come back. So it was smaller at that time, though. Now it's pretty big, and it seems to be faring pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's covered. It's covered in aphids.
Yeah. You could use the insecticidal soaps, which would be... get the labeled insecticidal soap. Do not mix dish soap up with water because that could cause damage to a plant. Use an insecticidal soap. And the great thing about that is it won't kill the good guys. So you want your lady beetle populations to build up so your bios, you know, the bio controls take over. And just by using the insecticidal soap, you can kill out the aphids and not kill the good guys.
I started seeing the beetles, you know, the ladybugs come. But you're saying it doesn't affect, like, whether a butterfly will lay an egg on the milk?
Nope, it does not. Hmm. No.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Nancy. We appreciate it. Good luck with your milkweed. We do have several emails. Cassidy emails, I have a bell pepper plant that I planted at the beginning of the season that has grown to almost 3 feet now but hasn't produced any flowers. I've tried pruning off old leaves and cutting back the top to stress it more into flowering, but no luck. Should I give up on it or any chance it could still produce? What do you think, Kamisha?
There may be a chance that it does produce, but I also would look into fertilizing the plant. There is a short window, so you may not get the harvest that you anticipated for this plant to produce, but I would look into if you need to fertilize the plant. Sounds like you've already pruned it and took those necessary precautions to try to give that energy, but it sounds like it may need more like phosphorus and potassium than a nitrogen fertilizer.
Okay. We also had a call from Kathy a little earlier. Kathy couldn't stay on the line, but Kathy wondered, with red cone flower, is there anything special you have to feed it to help keep its color? Brandon, do you have thoughts on that?
Red cone flower. Just trying to think what species that would be. I would say nothing would change the color. I would just say that it is what it is, and you can use fertilizer according to what that plant needs, according to if you have a deficiency. I never really fertilize unless I feel like there's a deficiency in the soil. Mm-hmm. So you might be fine and not actually need it.
Okay. We also got an email from Sarah. Sarah writes, I've heard we shouldn't water your grass during the day, but sometimes that's the only time I have to water. Is this okay, or even in the evening? What is your philosophy on grass watering, Pam?
So, first of all, the question is, do you want to keep it green or not? Because if you're okay with turf grass going dormant, it can go dormant for up to 3 weeks without any water at all. So I haven't watered my lawn at all this summer. I have a bluegrass ryegrass blend, and it's tolerating the drought quite nicely. When you get to that 3 week point and it's still dormant and hasn't had any rain, like those pop-up showers or anything, then you want to give it about an inch of water and soak the crown, and then it will survive another 3 weeks without water. So I don't worry about watering unless you want that nice green turf. Now, if you want to, you know, want green turf, you are definitely going to want to water in the morning. That's ideal. However, if you can't water in the morning because of scheduling, do it after work and as early as you possibly can so that the turf grass dries off before the sun goes down. And the reason we don't water at night, late at night, is because you have a nice, perfect environment for diseases to ramp up. So you've got that moisture, the humidity overnight, and then you can get some potential leaf spot diseases. But if you water it like right after work for an hour or so, and it dries off before, you know, the sun goes down, you should be okay.
Okay. Well, we will be back after a short break for the final minutes of today's gardening show. If you have questions, now's the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're in the home stretch of this month's final gardening show. My guests are Ohio State University Extension Educator Pamela Bennett, Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, and Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George. Now's the time to ask your questions. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Vance. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi there. So I've never gardened a day in my life, but I've recently become interested, and I kind of just want to know how I should get started with that.
Okay. Kamisha, are you talking about flowers or vegetables or some of each?
Flowers. Sorry.
Flowers. Okay. Brandon, what do you think?
I would first start visiting gardens that you like, and that would be my idea, is start figuring out what is inspiring you to garden in the first place. And then from there, once you see that what you like in other people's gardens, start to do the research about what those plants need, and do what you need to prepare the soil accordingly, or more often than not, grow things that are already going to do well in the soil you have. And I would always say, if you've never gardened, do a soil test right away. That's a great first step too.
And the extension offices, you can, they'll do those free, right?
If the whatever county you live in, go to that extension office, and they're more often than not free.
Okay. Vance, I hope that helps. Good luck with your garden. Okay, we have a bunch of emails that have come in, too. Peggy writes that our guests suggesting fertilizer as a matter of preference is not good advice. She disagrees. 2,4-D, the active ingredient in wheat and feed, for instance, reduces hatching success and causes birth defects in birds. The granules are mistaken by birds for grit that they eat. There is herbicide originally was one for of the two active ingredients in the Vietnam War era called Agent Orange. Pam, do you want to respond to that? I know you're not a I don't think you're a bird expert, but I didn't know if you had thoughts about this email that
she's right. There are definitely some research articles that show that birds pick up these granules, and you know they've been found in their bodies. First of all, 2,4-D is a herbicide. And when I mentioned, you know, you're using a herbicide and fertilizer mix, that would be different than just using a straight fertilizer. So a straight fertilizer is, like I said, mostly salts. And a straight fertilizer is not going to have herbicide in it. Again, water it in. When you water it in, those granules are gone. And, you know, you have less option, lower option for the birds to pick up those granules.
Do birds try to eat the salty fertilizer? Do you know?
I'm not a bird expert. I've never seen them do that. Right now, the starlings are in the lawn looking for some webworms. They're looking for grubs, whatever they can get a hold of. But I have not seen in my lawn, at least, birds picking up the salt granules.
Okay. Well, thank you. We got an email from Suda who emails, do we have to prune rose bushes in the fall? And if yes, what's the height to which they need to be pruned? And also is wondering how to cut and protect perennial Musa banana plants. You have thoughts on that, Brandon?
Yeah, with the rose, I'd probably wait till late winter, as it is a woody shrub. So in the fall, I don't think I would do it then. I'd wait till the late winter. And then by then, the first thing you know, you want to do the 3Ds, typically remove all of the dead, disease, damaged branches, those that cross. And then from there, get to a structure. And I tend to remove maybe like a third of the oldest rose canes and then keep the new, more vibrant growth for obviously increased blooms. When it comes to the Musa, now a lot of people I see with these because they're pretty hardy here, you know, but most often than not, you have great success for them overwintering if you cover them with straw or leaves, something that just protects those roots when we get those like really cold dips. And I think you'll be fine. So yeah, a healthy layer of straw or leaves to protect their crowns below the soil surface would be good.
Okay. We have another caller. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call again. On to trees this time. I have a 3-year-old autumn glow maple that I planted. And my front, I live in Blue Ash. My front yard is just like a mix of probably clay and whatever. I had it attacked by maple gall for a couple of years now. I dealt with it pretty well with preen. But I've got a fair amount of pip dieback. This tree is about like 15, 17 feet tall. And then a few of the branches up at the top are, you know, maybe like nothing growing, maybe for like a foot or so, and 3 or 4 or 5 of them. And I was wondering what that's about.
Okay. Pam, do you have thoughts on that?
A couple things to think about here. Number one is the planting depth. Make sure that the root flare is just slightly above or at ground level. Sometimes trees get planted a little too deep and the roots are below ground and they lack oxygen the deeper they go. So that can cause some challenges with the above ground parts of the tree. Make sure there's not a girdling root. You know, when you go down and look for that root flare, make sure there's not a root kind of wrapping around the base of the tree. And then the other thing is kind of review your watering schedule for the last 3 years since it's been in the ground. Young trees in the first 3 to 5 years, when we get into this kind of dry spell, they need additional moisture. And when you see tip dieback like that, just branch dieback or a branch here and there, it usually tells me that that tree did not get sufficient water during its development phase. So those first few years are really critical for a good deep watering when we get into this dry spell.
Carrie, I hope that helps. Good luck with that tree.
Thank you.
Thank you. We also, I almost forgot about Violet. Violet called earlier, couldn't stay on the line. Violet asks, could you please explain the best method to divide and separate perennials? And I wish Violet could see your hands when you explain this, Brandon, because you've got a gesture that really makes it very clear.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
So, well, first of all, you need to know if it's a fall blooming perennial or if it's a summer or early blooming perennial. Because if it's fall blooming, you don't want to divide it when it's about to bloom. That'll put it in shock. So you would do those in the spring. But more often than not, it's going to be an earlier season blooming or a summer blooming perennial, which you would do in the fall. Some perennials that have more delicate roots, you can do the double fork technique where you take two pitchforks, you put them back to back, and then you kind of pry them. And so instead of severing the roots like you would with a shovel, this can be where you kind of pull the roots apart, you tease them apart, and so you do less damage, and therefore sometimes less wounds, which can have pathogens enter and have other issues. But that can be a way for fragile roots.
Okay. Again, I wish you could have seen that. It's kind of like when you put your hands together to make the people. If you're doing, here's the church, here's the steeple. That's if you've ever done that nursery rhyme, that's kind of what he was doing. We have Peter on the line. Hey, Peter, thanks for calling.
Hey, Lucy. Hey, panel. I tuned in late, so you may have brought this up. Is my garden in need of extra watering because of I don't think it's rained often?
It's been pretty dry and hot, huh? That's a good question. What do you think, Brandon?
It certainly won't hurt to water things. It depends on, again, it depends on the plant, its location. So things that are more established, larger things, they might be fine and they're just going to go dormant and weather through it. If it's obviously an annual, something that's newly planted, you definitely want to consider supplying supplemental irrigation because it's probably stressed.
Hope that.
Some decorative grasses that are my quote lawn unquote.
Are you wondering if those need water, those decorative grasses?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they're well established, they're probably fine. Grasses are very drought tolerant, generally speaking.
Yeah. It's good news for your water bill, Peter. Thanks so much for calling. Bye bye. We have so many emails. I'm worried we're not going to get to everybody. Nathaniel emails, I have bloom-struck endless summer hydrangea in my garden, and I'm trying to make them blue. I've used holly tone in the soil and feed them used coffee grounds to make the soil more acidic, but they're still not blue. What else can I do after they're already planted to make them blue, and how long can this change take?
Sulfur. You're going to have to drop the pH a lot. And honestly, in heavy clay, it's going to be a long process. You almost, if you really reliably want blue hydrangeas, you either want to grow them in a raised bed, completely change
out of the
soil, or put them in a pot. Because I just think you're working, nature's working against you here with those blue hydrangeas. It's difficult in our alkaline soils with clay.
Okay. Bad news for Nathaniel. Okay. Hey, Timothy, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call again. I had asked earlier, maybe there's some weeds going around distracting my sunflowers from gaining its nutrients. I noticed that there were a few different types. Are all weeds bad weed, or maybe I could keep some? I don't know how to differentiate.
Oh, okay. Good question. Do we have weed friends and weed foes?
Well, I mean, some could be great. They could be volunteer plants that you like, but no matter what, whether it's good or bad, it's still competition for a plant you want. So whether it's good or bad, you might want to take some of those good ones, maybe put them someplace else, and then get rid of the bad ones. And therefore, again, like we said, you'll have more nutrients available to that sunflower as well as water that is getting to it that is no longer being taken up by the surrounding plants.
You're going to have to pick some favorites there, Timothy. Thanks so much for calling back. Good luck with your sunflower. Okay, let's see if we can get to some more of these emails. Okay, Joy had called. She couldn't stay on the line. Joy has 2 3-year-old magnolia trees. They don't have coverage and get plenty of sun. How often should they be watered and fed in direct sun? Pam, do you have thoughts about those magnolia trees?
Yep. Just like anything else, going back to this time of the year, when it gets dry like this, you start seeing cracks in the soil. Give them a good soaking, and the best way to do it is take the hose, lay it down around the base of the plant under where the drip line is, turn it on a very slow trickle, and just let it go for several hours so it really saturates that root system deep. Think about the root ball where you planted it, If that's not established and taking in moisture, it's losing water faster than it's taking it in. So, you know, really soak that root ball area. In terms of fertilizing, best time is going to be to do it in the early spring. Or some research indicates you can do it like in November, which is real similar to the turf grass, that it takes it in, stores it in the root system, and then it's ready for next year to take off. But watering right now is just, it's critical for your young plants, your shallow rooted plants, your vegetable gardens, things that, you know, you want to keep producing right now.
And we had Marianne on hold, but the call dropped. Marianne wanted to know when she should separate her sunflowers and her lilies. Brandon, you have thought to answer for Marianne?
The sunflowers are annuals, I assume. So if they were annuals, I don't think you would separate them unless you're planting them in the spring for space. For the lilies, perennial lilies, I would say those form like bulblets and bulbs. So that would be a good option for the fall. And you can do that, I would say, when it gets cooler and a little bit more moist. Right now, the soil is so dry, it might be hard to dig them up. So I might wait until October, November.
Okay. We got an email from Karen. Karen writes, we had a garden that had tiger lilies reduced in size by digging out the lilies, then having sod installed. We've been watering regularly and the grass is doing great, but there are many new tiger lily shoots now growing through the sod. Can we use a broadleaf weed control to kill the lilies, or what would you suggest? Pam, I'll go to you for this one.
Just keep mowing. I wouldn't even worry about a broadleaf weed control. If they're small shoots, she might be having them for a long time. You keep mowing. You could use a broadleaf weed control if you want to, and the fall is the time to do it. But if they're really tiny bulblets, you know, little ones that are just coming up from seed, after you keep mowing for several, you know, right now you're probably not mowing much because it's dry. But once the grass starts growing again this fall and you keep mowing, you'll eventually starve them and you won't have them.
They will get the message eventually, huh, Pam?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Ohio State University Extension Educator Pamela Bennett, Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, and Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lucy. It was great.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.